Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are going to be talking about Cubs baseball, White Sox baseball, the Bulls in the play-in tournament, the Blackhawks tank update, and a little more pre-draft Bears talk. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly affordable prices. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing on this beautiful, gorgeous weather we have here in the Chicagoland area?
Loving it. Loving the weather. Doing good. I really appreciate the fact that not only is it nice, but it's going to stay nice. It's not going to be one of those things where, oh, here's a nice day or two. Now here's some snow and some sleet. It looks like it's going to stay nice for a while, so I'm going to soak it all in as much as I can.
Yeah, those are like the teaser Chicago days. We're like, oh, you get 2 days of really nice weather. Ha-ha, here is 6 inches of snow.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And I think that that's one of the big things when you look at April. Because we see that all the time. We've seen snow in April. We've seen our fair share of it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I tell the story of when I was a kid. My birthday is in early June, and we still had snow drifts at one time on my birthday.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, it was the snow on the ground, but it was like, you know, in the grocery store parking lot when they plow it into a big pile. That yep. pile was still there in June.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you have those piles in the right spot where it's like it's so piled up that there's so much of it to melt, or if it's like behind like a tree or a wall or something and it's just always shaded so the sun never shines on it, that happens quite a bit where those mounds just stick around. I remember in 2011, we had that big blizzard, and for months there were still some mounds from that blizzard lying around.
I remember that when that blizzard happened. The entrance to my apartment I was living in at the time was through the alley, and there was so much snow that the door came out, not in. So I couldn't get out, and I had to push and push and push. And as you're pushing, it's just packing the snow. Finally got enough to squeeze out, and then had to shovel that, which I didn't have a shovel because I lived in an apartment. It was just mayhem. And my
so what you use your hands?
I used cardboard boxes and whatever I had.
It sounds awful.
Yeah, because I didn't have a shovel. you don't own a shovel when you live in an apartment. I live in a house now. I have multiple shovels, but at the time, and I remember we're from Chicago. When I hear there's going to be snow, I don't go, oh my God, I got to run to the store and get groceries. I see how much snow. I'm like, oh man, this is really bad. And then I look in my refrigerator. I'm like, I don't have any food to eat. I'm like, I've got bread and some rice. And I'm like, I don't have anything. I have a banana.
So your Kool-Aid jug and your wooden spoon, it's just completely empty.
It's just, they're just dry as a bone. So I'm like, oh man, I gotta go. So I basically just walked through the snow drifts up to my head, And I'm just trudging through until I could get to the street, and the street had been plowed. So then I just like walked on the street like three blocks, and then Bocce's Pizza was open. So it's like, all right, I'm going to go get Bocce's Pizza, even though I don't like Bocce's Pizza, but bad pizza is better than no pizza.
Oh yeah. I mean, take anything.
Yeah. So anything. I was like, let me get a bunch of pizza. And then I just came back to my apartment and sat and enjoyed pizza until you know, everything was plowed.
Listen, I've had, quote, good pizza and bad pizza, and there's obviously levels of pizza, but honestly, at the end of the day, pizza's pizza, and I'll eat it.
Basically. So, where do you want to start today?
Well, okay, so I really wanted to talk about the Bulls, not really for what we're going to be previewing, but I just want to share some feelings about this team that, you know, we've touched on a little bit over the weeks, but we haven't really gone in depth about this team. And I think now that the season is over, the regular season is over, the 82 games are over, we're the 10 seed heading to the play-in tournament, I think we could get into this more. And I think your feelings, my feelings, and pretty much everybody's all pretty much align with what I'm going to say. I don't know if that's where you'd want to start, but
go for
that's
it.
So that's where I kind of want to start. So if I had to describe this season in one word, if I had to choose just one word, first of all, I'll ask you first. I know how I'd describe it, but how would you describe this season in one word if you had to?
Inconsistent.
Okay. I mean, that's true.
Disappointing, frustrating.
I think frustrating is valid. I don't want to say disappointing because, frankly, after this offseason, this past offseason, the lack of moves, the fact that your two moves were Andre Drummond and Goran Dragic. And listen, Drummond was a fine addition, he was a fine player, but it wasn't fixing any of your issues. But frustrating, I definitely agree with. But do you see what I say with the disappointing part? Like
the Drummond move, I wasn't disappointed in, because the Bulls last year had a serious issue with rebounding the basketball.
Which, yeah, I mean, that was an issue, but did that really make you much better?
So in theory, so not in practicality, in theory, you get Lonzo Ball back at some point, and you have Andre Drummond to come in and take some minutes, rebound the basketball. You have a real point guard with him and a healthy Caruso. You're again defending the passing lanes, and are you a competitor for the title? No, but you should be a decent team that could win a playoff series. And then Caruso's not healthy, Lonzo is maybe done forever, and Drummond's not giving you Drummond doesn't give you the minutes that I guess you'd hope for. And the Goran Dragic one was for 3-point shooting ability, and that has not paid off.
Yeah, I mean, look, here's my thing. Is, as I said, Drummond was fine. It wasn't the fact that they got Drummond. It's the fact that that was their big move. A very flawed team, and your big move was Andre Drummond, when you had plenty of issues that you had to address, whether it was 3-point shooting, defense, its size. I mean, obviously Drummond was going to address part of that, but you were still a flawed team. You were a flawed team coming into the season. And I think there was a lot of skepticism, myself included, if Lonzo Ball was going to give you anything. The injury was so mysterious and so bleak from everything we've heard and what we've not heard too, because let's be real, we didn't hear a lot for a while. So going into the season, I didn't expect anything more than about a 500 team.
That's fair.
So how I would describe it in one word is empty. It was an empty season. Because here's the big question. As we go into this play-in tournament, here, we know what the range is, right? The ceiling is you win a play-in tournament and you get killed by the Bucks in the first round. The floor is you get beat in either the first game against the Raptors or the second game. I mean, either way, you're not going on a long playoff run with a chance of a title.
You're there's like a 0.00001 chance of you doing anything at all.
Exactly. And the chances of them keeping their pick from a lottery is like what, less than 2%?
Their odds of getting a top four is 8%.
Okay, so it's probably less than 2 to get the first overall, but...
It is less than 2 to get the first overall. It's right. 8% to get a top four, which is what's protected.
Right, right. So, I mean, really, either way, whether you get that first round pick or not, are you going to get anything overly impactful with that first round pick?
I mean, so you're saying if they keep their first round pick?
Correct.
So if they get a top four?
Yes. If you get like a four pick, because for like, I don't like if obviously if you get a number one pick, that's
you're getting Victor Wembanyama.
Exactly.
The number one pick. And those
chances are minuscule.
Yeah. That's so like, just not happening. And then from there, honestly, I have not scouted. I don't know what the level of guy is after that. I mean, you know, typically after one, two, maybe three, it's a, you know, you could get a good player. You could get a bad player.
It's a crapshoot.
It is a crapshoot.
That's my whole point.
I mean, you know, I would rather have that crapshoot with a four pick than lose out on the pick to the,
Oh, me too.
The Orlando Magic.
The Orlando Magic, right. I mean, me too. I mean, that's not even a question. What I'm just trying to say is the chances that this works where you not only get a top four pick, but like you win the lottery is so small and you have a team that's stuck in purgatory. And who knows, you're probably, the chances of you even getting a top four, you said what, 8%?
8%.
Those aren't great odds.
No, they're not great. But my concern is, and obviously none of us are privy to what goes on behind the scenes, but what is the plan? I mean, you could put a great plan in a place and in reality sort of just thing, the balls don't bounce your way. You're like, oh, hey, you know, we signed this free agent and then do this, this, and this, and injuries happen, or he don't end up getting the guy you wanted, whatnot. You know, plans are only plans, and you know,
sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
Yeah. But I would love to know what Arturas's plan is. I mean, are they thinking of re-signing Vooch? If not, like it's a weird double-edged sword. If you are you going to re-sign him and spend a ton of money on him, or are you going to lose him for nothing? And then that trade is essentially a disaster trade
for nothing, right? No, I mean that's another problem I have here is that you're potentially going to let him walk and you're not going to get anything for it. I mean, and if you resign him, the dude's already older. And, you know, this year, I think the overall body of work was fine. You had good moments. You had moments where things ended ugly in games where something happened. I was there for one of them when he missed both free throws and they ended up losing. And, you know, you've had him hit some big shots in other games. The overall body of work was fine. But, you know, again, he's over 30 now. he was an all-star in Orlando, and it's just, it's been kind of a up and down ride with Vooch ever since he got here. And so if you re-sign him, you're committing longer term to a guy who's already older and is probably not going to reach that level he was in Orlando. And you gave up a lot to get this guy. The hope was, if you were going to sell off this year, and let's say somebody took Vooch, and even if you didn't get something spectacular, getting something is better than letting him walk. And I just don't know how valuable it is to bring him back at this point of his career. I can't answer that question easily.
My hope is a sign and trade. I have nothing against Vooch. I didn't think he was with DeMar and Zach. It's a weird fit with Vooch. You know, you took him out of a system that, and a style that made him an all-star. And he had to shift his game around, and this season was the best that we saw him in a Bulls uniform, but it still wasn't what we expected when we traded for him. I would assume in the offseason you're going to move DeMar.
And then again,
nothing against DeMar, but he's got 1 year left on his contract. You're not going to re-sign him.
And he's what, 33, 34 now?
Yeah, I think you got to move him. His game is very similar to Zach's. So it's a little bit redundant. I think at this point you've got to take Zach LaVine and just build around him for better or worse, and find pieces that complement him.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, what are you going to do with Zach LaVine? I think you kind of alluding to what you said, you kind of got to. You gave him a max deal, and he's going to be around for a number of years. He's under contract, you know, unless you moved him, but, you know, he's under contract for a number of years. And I think that when you look at what the roster is now, you know, I'm looking at the payroll right now, the figures, and, you know, Zach LaVine is one of the few who is under contract past next year. And obviously you have the Lonzo Ball thing, but we don't even know if he's going to play again. He's through 24-25. At least it's a player option for 24-25. But regardless, his final guaranteed year is indeed next year, but he does have that player afterwards. But is he going to play again? I don't know. And then Coby White becomes a restricted free agent. Andre Drummond, player. Derrick Jones Jr., player. Dalen Terry is going to be around for a few years. So there's not a whole lot that's locked up here long-term outside of Zach LaVine.
Right. You know, you don't have a ton of room here. And I mean,
what do you do with Ayo Dosunmu?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, what are you going to do with Coby White? I feel like with, they've had so many young players that they've moved on from that have found success after they've left the Bulls, that if you let Coby White go, he's going to be the next one.
You know, and the thing is too, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is he a superstar? No, but he's also a player that has grown every year and is a good scorer. And I think he's a player that you've got to bring back.
Well, Coby White played pretty well recently. He's played fairly well. So we've seen him kind of take that next step. Ayo Dosunmu, we've seen some struggles, right? Like, what is he worth? That's the big question to me, is what is he worth? Is he, you know, I don't necessarily want to get rid of him. And I think you can keep him for not a lot of money. I don't think it's going to cost you an arm and a leg to keep Io DeSumo. And I like the idea of keeping him around. I just, will they? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the room too. It just depends on, is he a restricted free agent?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to guess they bring him back.
That's probably my guess too.
You know, the question is, do they bring back Patrick Beverley?
Yeah, I mean, he's also a free agent.
He wasn't
making much this year.
No, less than a million.
Probably not going to make, right, he's probably not going to make that much next year. You think that maybe they just bring him back on like a one-year deal or something?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because I don't think at this point of Pat Bev's career, the market's going to be overly hot for him.
I think in the off season, I wouldn't be surprised if they re-signed Vooch, but traded DeMar. That wouldn't surprise me.
I just wonder what you'd get in return. I don't know.
I don't know.
It wouldn't surprise me either. It wouldn't surprise me either, but.
But if nothing else, it takes off $28 million off of your salary. I am going to guess that they're going to try to trade Alex Caruso.
Yeah, I could see that too.
Patrick Williams, I think he's under contract. So.
He is. He,
you bring him back.
Club exercise for next year. Then he's a restricted free agent the year afterwards.
You just sort of got to build around, and you're going to have the Lonzo Ball contract hanging over your head for a couple more seasons, knowing full well he's not going to play. And
$20.5 million next year.
And the only thing you can hope for is having him be medically, basically medically saying that he can't, his career is over. And that is something that has to go through arbitration with, the Players Association. So that's not an easy conversation either.
No.
So I highly doubt that happens. So you're the Bulls. You're $20.5 million short on the salary cap. You have to, worse than that is you're paying this guy. You've got to pay another guy to take that spot because he can't play. So whoever fills that spot, it's essentially whatever that guy's making. So let's say they pay Patrick Beverley $3 million next year. Then basically that one spot is costing almost $24 million.
Yeah.
It's tough. I would love to know what the plan is, and sure. If they win that lottery, that the plan gets a little more clear. You're like, okay, Wembanyama plays center for this team and we don't need Vooch. But short of that, I don't know.
It just, the whole thing is frustrating because I'm going to ask this question again. What did we really accomplish this year? And the most you can accomplish is a play-in tournament win. Is that really the goal? No.
It's, I mean, this is just a wasted year, really. Is, you know, what are the odds you win two games to even go play Milwaukee? I'm going to say slim.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can win the first game against Toronto, but I don't know how much further they go after that. I can tell you one thing, they're not beating the Bucks in the first round if they get that far. That's obvious.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's a definite. I would think they'd be lucky even win one game in that series.
Right. If they stole one game, that would be a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, so odds are Miami beats Atlanta. I would be shocked if that's not what happens.
That would be my, I mean, if I was a betting man, that would be my guess too. I think that's most people's guesses.
Could the Bulls beat Toronto? Yes, they could, and they have. So they would have to beat Toronto and Atlanta back-to-back games to even get a chance to play Milwaukee.
Right.
And
that, yeah, that just, yeah.
So that's where we're at with this. You know, it's honestly, I would rather they lose and at least get that 8% chance of, you know, the, getting the top four pick, yeah, than making the playoffs and losing out. And honestly,
I agree.
Honestly, that seems like the smart decision isn't to not make the playoffs and at least get that, you know, is 8% a good opportunity? No, but it's not the worst percentage at all.
It still opens a very small window for you as opposed to having no window open whatsoever.
Right. Like there's absolutely 0% chance that you beat Milwaukee.
Right. Right. Every player on their team would either have to get hurt or have their talent stolen by the Monstars. And I don't see that happening.
Yeah. It's just not going to happen. Like just it's, you know, I don't know any other way to express that. But you know, sure, you won two games in a row here, but you beat a Dallas team that was absolutely just putting the tank on.
They were actively trying to lose, and we're not talking about a team that is assembled to lose. I mean, they were actively trying to lose that game.
And so you beat them, and then you beat just a stinker of a team in Detroit. But, you know, yeah, when you
there,
got...
There was zero stock in that game.
But you got your ass beat on Wednesday against the Bucks team that didn't have their two best players.
And then before that, you lost to that Atlanta team that didn't have Trey, right?
Yeah.
He wasn't playing.
And they beat you by almost 20 points.
Yeah. And you were at home. This is what drove me crazy about the Bulls all year long. How many times did we say, wow, that was an impressive win against they've beaten Milwaukee in the regular season? They beat the Celtics in the regular season. They whooped the Warriors at one time. Remember when they went to Denver and took on a really good Nuggets team and dismantled them?
Yep.
That was all cool and great. And then what happened? You lose to the Magic. And you lose to teams that aren't 100%. How many times did we go into a game where it said, hey, we got a big advantage, so-and-so isn't playing, and they end up losing? Happened all the time. And listen, you can look back and say, oh, hey, well, we did win a few games against Milwaukee this year. Oh, what if they made the playoffs? No, this is the playoffs, okay? When it comes to the playoffs, the better teams are going to prevail. You can steal wins in the regular season against better teams, but in a 7-game playoff series, you can pretty dream on about beating Milwaukee, even if you did it a few times in the regular season. And you know what? You looked pretty bad against them when they didn't have Giannis, or I think it was Giannis and who else were they missing that night?
Middleton only played 8 minutes and then got injured.
So he was barely a factor.
Yeah, he was.
And we still lost.
I think he had zeros across the board. So,
right.
You essentially didn't have their two best players and they beat you soundly. And, you know, when it's a, and they're just, and at this point, they're just toying around. You know, in the playoffs, they're going to come looking for blood. And they beat your ass last year in the playoffs. And, you know, you're not a better team than you were last year.
No. So,
I don't know. It's I hope that they lose. And this is I'm not trying to be a negative Nancy, but I hope they lose in this play-in tournament because I don't want to go through the embarrassment of getting our asses kicked again by the Bucks.
Yep.
And I would rather have that slim chance of you know, top four draft pick.
I don't want to watch this team anymore. Just get this season done. We know they're not winning a championship. We know they're not going anywhere in the playoffs. Just end it. Be done with it. Just be done with it. I mean, Sean, we were told going into the season that the goal was to at least win a playoff series, to go further into the playoffs. And that goal has not come to light. It's not coming to light. The most you're going to get is a play-in tournament and or an ass kicking in the first round. I go back to this question again. What did we accomplish? We didn't accomplish our goal. There wasn't the most I could say we accomplished from the season is maybe growing Patrick Williams a little bit and maybe seeing a bit more from Coby White in terms of the overall picture. But, you know, we're talking about role players improving. I like Patrick Williams as a role player, but is he going to be a future star? I don't think so. I like Coby White. I have his jersey, but he's a role player. You had your max contract Zach LaVine get off to a really piss poor start, and you kind of needed Patrick Beverley to come and kick him into gear. You didn't get anything from Lonzo Ball because he's been hurt. DeMar DeRozan is a very good all-star player, but he showed that he's not going to be able to carry you like an MVP like he did last year for a chunk of the season. We all knew that wasn't sustainable. So you didn't come away accomplishing anything. That's why this feels so empty. You didn't accomplish your goal of improving and giving yourself a chance to win anything in the postseason. You didn't see any leaps from anybody. Again, I think you saw some good strides from Patrick Williams, but again, we're talking about a role player type guy. We're not talking about a core member that you're building a winning team around. So it's empty. It's all just empty.
I fully agree. I don't disagree at all. So it's, again, it goes back to what is the plan? And I don't know. And I think you're going to have to, you can't run this team back out. That would just be,
no.
I think fans would lose their shit, rightfully so. I think you have to make wholesale changes. And, you know, do you necessarily have to tear it down? No, but you have to prune prune everything back to try to let things grow. And I think that means, you know, trade maybe bringing back Vooch and then have that be a two-headed monster versus the three, maybe. Or maybe you try to sign and trade Vooch and get something for him. But I think you got to move DeMar and then try to build that way. It's not pretty, and I'm not expecting a whole lot next year.
No. And I bring this question up too. Was the plan for AK 2 years ago for over these next few years to build something at least competitive, to buy them some time to figure out things long term? Is that a fair speculation where you could say, you know what? We're going to create a winning culture. We're going to bring in some good players. We're going to be like a mid-seed type team in the East where we can maybe win a playoff series and we can be in a lot of games and we'll have this identity that we're competitive and we're good. But as we're at least competitive and good, we're going to try to figure out things long-term. And just that ceiling of where AK wanted this team to be over the past 2 years just hasn't been met. Because, I mean, things started off pretty good last year, and then Lonzo Ball got hurt, and then you had DeMar DeRozan, who was carrying this team. You know, he started to get fatigued and kind of went on to show that you're not going to do it, and the flaws were exposed in the playoffs last year against the Bucks. So the goal this year to win a playoff series could have bought you some more time. And I think that was the vision here where you could build off last year, and it just flat out hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't. I mean, maybe that was the plan, but I don't know if that seems like a very good plan. I don't know. I'm not here to second guess at this point, but I'm getting close to second guessing. And honestly, I'm going to go out there and say that is, might it be time to move on from Billy Donovan?
I don't think you're the only one asking the question. And
I don't know if I'm, and again, I'm not calling for his job at this point, but I think it's fair to ask that question.
We've seen things from a coaching perspective that really made us scratch our heads at times. And it, you know, we think about what's going on behind the scenes and we can only speculate so much, but what we actually see on the court, there have been times when you're like, okay, what? You know, I don't think Billy Donovan is a bad coach. I just think, like the way this Bulls team was constructed, your ceiling isn't good enough to sustain success with the top dogs. I think you have a fine coach in Billy Donovan, but he's not a Greg Popovich or an Eric Spoelstra or somebody like that. He's not a top tier coach, but he's not an awful one either.
Right.
It's just, again, you're in a position where you're like, it's not bad, but it's not great.
I mean, when you're AK and you come into a tough situation and a Billy Donovan becomes available, I get it. You bring him in, but I don't know if he's your long-term answer, and it wouldn't be the first job he's been fired from. So I think it does beg that question, is if you're AK, is Billy Donovan the ship you're willing to go down with?
Right. I don't know how long he's, because didn't they extend him and we don't really know?
That's the assumption, is he was extended, but I don't think anything's been publicly said yet.
Yeah, you know how they are.
It's secrets, secrets, secrets.
Secrets, secrets are no fun. Secrets, secrets hurt someone.
I love that episode of The Office.
Oh, thank you for getting that.
That show is so good.
I know. It's a classic.
But on the, you know, not even the other side of town, in the same building, we have the Blackhawks, who totally botched it by winning a game. And this team, it's funny. Like, they're so devoid of talent, and the front office is doing everything they can to lose. But this team plays hard. They just have no talent.
They do.
Mean, imagine some of the talent that you had under the Colleton era. If you had this coaching staff with that talent, like, I think you could actually, I mean, you're not competing for a Stanley Cup, but I think you are making some noise.
Yeah, I think you're at least somewhat competing.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, you're not a top dog, and you're not going to win a Stanley Cup, but you're also not going to be missing out on the playoffs or, you know, sneaking in, you know, during COVID. Like, I think you're one of those middle of the pack playoff teams.
Yeah, sure. I think there's something to be said about that. I mean, if Colleton was coaching this team, I don't know if we'd even have 17 wins.
Oh, we'd be real bad. I mean, this is already a bad enough team. You know, but right now there's 3 games left, and the only, you know, the biggest hope we have is that for the last 3 games, we have the Tankmaster General in goal.
The Tank Commander.
Because you are tied, well, I guess you're behind Columbus. You're 1 point ahead of San Jose, and they've all got 3 games Anaheim. Left. Oh, is it? Sorry, Anaheim?
Yep.
Okay. And Anaheim has 3 games left against Colorado, Los Angeles Kings, and Vancouver. You've got 3 games left against the Wild, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh.
Okay. And Columbus
is Philadelphia, Buffalo, Pittsburgh.
I mean, all 3 teams could lose out all 3 times. It also depends, you are playing playoff teams, and on those final days of the season, sometimes they rest their guys.
I mean, anything can happen. You know, you've seen a couple of these teams win a few games. And
Columbus has won 3 of their last 10. That's not very good, but for Columbus.
Let's see. So San Jose is not out of the picture yet, but 4 points out, they're almost out of that picture. So, I mean, we know which teams are going to be the bottom 4 teams. Columbus, Chicago, Anaheim, San Jose.
Mm-hmm. Because Montreal's way ahead.
Yeah, Montreal's 8 points ahead. Even Arizona is ahead of all of them by a lot. Yep. So, you know, it comes down to these last 3 games here. And yeah, San Jose has they have one sort of easy game. And that's not even easy. It's their easiest game. So they've got the Oilers and the Winnipeg, and then they've got Calgary. Calgary is their most likely winnable game. Anaheim actually has Vancouver, which is a winnable game. And Columbus has 3 winnable games, I think. So it's going to be interesting coming down to the wire here.
Yeah. I mean, if we lose out, I mean, all we can do is lose out. Like, that's.
Yeah. That's all you can do. And
if we lose out, we're top 3.
If we lose out, we finish with the 2nd worst record.
Yep.
And the worst draft pick we could get would be 4.
And I mean, they sent Reichel down to Rockford, so he's not even part of the picture.
Yo, I mean, that's the thing is this is that dance you have to do where the coaching staff and the players are trying to win. They don't give a shit. They want to win.
Right.
And the front office is like, we want to lose. And you can't tell the coach to lose. You can't tell the players to lose. So what do? you mess with the roster.
Yeah. I mean, the front office is doing everything they can. Well, they could do more. They could be like Rachel Phelps from Major League and replace their plane with like a old fashioned propeller plane that's kept together with tape, or they could get rid of the hot water in the tubs or, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, from a front office perspective with a roster construction, they're absolutely doing everything they can. I mean, I don't even know who the hell's even on this team anymore, honestly.
Oh, there's some people you're just like, woof, who is this?
You got Taze playing again. You got Andres Athanasiou. You have Seth Jones. And it's like, okay, those are like the main three. Because Radish is done for the year because he's injured now. Which is, you know, he was playing pretty well. I like Taylor Radish. I think he's a nice piece to have going forward. Not a big piece, but a piece.
Yeah. The other bit of news is Jonathan Toews came back.
He did.
The question is this it?
I mean, even if he doesn't retire next year, his contract's up.
He's a guy like Patrick Kane. If somebody told me, hey, I came from the future, my name is Biff, and Patrick Kane comes back to the Blackhawks, I go, okay, I could believe you. If you tell me Jonathan Toews comes back, I would be real shocked. And
yeah, I would be too.
My thinking is, this is totally Sean's opinion, his perception of things is Jonathan Toews knows he's going to retire. That's why he worked so hard to come back for these last couple games, because that's it. It's his last time wearing a Blackhawk sweater. It's going to be the last time wearing a sweater in professional hockey. He's hanging them up. And so it was important for him to get back on the ice. And that's my opinion on it. I don't think he would have, if he had one more year in his deal, I don't think he comes back. For this season, he just gets healthy, tries to come back for next season. But this is the last year of the deal, and these the last couple games left. I think he's retiring. I would be shocked if it's otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a bad theory. I feel like there was an incentive to play because he knows he might is probably not. I don't know if he knows he's going to retire, but I think he might get the sense that he's not going to be playing for the Hawks next year, regardless if he retires or not.
Fair. I mean, these are definitely the last few games he's wearing a Blackhawks sweater.
It certainly seems that way. And, you know, the funny thing is that when he started with the Hawks, they were irrelevant. Now he's ending with the Hawks. They're kind of irrelevant again. Not as irrelevant as they were, but, you know, they're not Stanley Cup contenders like they were for so many years. And unfortunately, the timeline for this to get a lot better is still extended. So his time is coming to an end in the NHL, and the Blackhawks are going to take a long time before they get good. So there's no like, oh, hey, you know, sign a one-year deal next year. We're trying to win a cup. Go out one more time with us. That's not the case here. Even if like what, regardless if he wanted to play or not, there's not that option to re-sign with the Hawks for the purpose of going on one more run, because this is not going to turn into a Stanley Cup contender in 1 year.
No, no.
But you know what? I can say this. I feel better about the Blackhawks' future than I do the Bulls.
Yes, because you see a path. Because I mean,
yes.
Here's, I mean, there's always a trajectory when you are in the arc of these things. Is the Blackhawks are at the very bottom. We see the bottom. We're here. You know, we don't know how long we're going to stay at the bottom, but we know what the bottom looks like. We don't know anybody on this team. They are, you know, in a week, they're going to have a ton of salary cap space. They've got a shit ton of draft picks. They very well could have a generational talent lottery ticket. They got the lottery ticket. They may hit on that lottery ticket for a generational talent. It's everything is pointing up. It's just when, but we're at the bottom. It can only go up. The Bulls still have to go down before they go up. And will their down have to be as far down as the Blackhawks to get to the point where we want them to be? No, I don't think so. Because the Blackhawks were just in a bad spot and they really needed to tear it down to the studs. And the Bulls, mm-hmm. I don't know if they necessarily have to, because you have a superstar player. And so you have the opportunity to just sort of shed some dead weight and try to retool and make this a relevant team. So, I would say your chances of winning a title, I think the Blackhawks are closer, because they're going to rebuild this the right way. They're going to rebuild from the bottom and build through the draft and supplement with free agency and really try to build this team the right way.
And hopefully they're able to develop right.
Right. The Bulls, I think, Zach is a very good basketball player, but they are building around a guy who is an incomplete basketball player, and he is not one of the top 10 guys. And
right.
I don't know where you get another guy to add to him, to compliment him. So it's the Bulls are better than the Blackhawks, but the Blackhawks are closer to a championship.
Yeah. And we're not close to a championship, but it feels like we're closer to the Bulls.
Yes. It's because one team is just gonna, you know, it's like, have you ever seen American Ninja Warrior?
Mm-hmm.
You know that one where it's like the curved wall that you have to run up and pull yourself up? The Bulls are sitting there going, they're already there. They just can't get over that wall. And they're already too far along. They're not going to go back and restart. And, you know, they can't get any traction to get up that wall. And the Blackhawks are at the starting line. But you're like, we're physically farther away from the finishing where we want to be, but we have the better tools. So it's going to take them a long time to get to the point where the Bulls are at. But the hope is that with the development and tearing this down to the studs, that you're building the infrastructure to not hit that wall that the Bulls are hitting right now.
Right, exactly.
So when we talk next, the season will be over. We will know exactly what the Blackhawks' odds are to get Connor Bedard. And hope beyond hope that we get that number one pick, because that would be sick. You know what would be crazy? And is very, very slim odds here, but the Bears had the number one pick. They decided to trade it, but they had the number one pick. The Blackhawks, you know, have decent odds to get the number one pick. And the Bulls have a slim but a real chance to get the number one pick. What if all three teams got the number one pick in the same year?
That'd be cool and sad.
It would. That's exactly what I was saying. It's like, I was kind of doing the math there and I was like, this would be crazy cool, but really sad that this is the state of Chicago sports right now.
I like to think you were doing the math on like one of those old fashioned tax calculators with the roll of paper and you're just like crunch, 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 crunch.
And I've got a visor on.
And like those glasses with like the chain on them, like the librarian glasses. You're just sitting at the kitchen table. Crunch, 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 crunch. Your wife comes in. Sean, what are you doing? Not now.
I rip the ticker tape off of the calculator. And like, look at these. Look at these results.
What am I looking at? I don't understand. Tank odds.
Do you see the tank that's going on?
Crunch, 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 crunch.
Oh my god. But three games left.
Boy, this NHL and NBA, both of them, it feels like these seasons have been just so long.
It's always like, a long season when you lose.
It is. It's funny because like it feels like the openers for both these teams were just ages ago.
Should we talk a little baseball here?
Why don't we?
Let's start with Cubs. There's a lot of good things to like about this team. I like the energy that they played with. I love that what Dansby Swanson is bringing to this team.
Me too.
You know, yesterday, which have been Saturday, when he scored from first, like that was pure hustle and determination.
Yeah.
He looks like a man trying to earn this contract, and I love it. You know, Justin Steele didn't have all the stuff. It looked like he was struggling a little bit, but he powered through and pitched a pretty good game. Stroman is looking great so far.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, his six shutout inning performance on Friday, he only gave up two hits.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying not to extrapolate too far off of, you know, this short portion of the season so far. I mean, the Cubs have only played eight games, but I don't want to extrapolate 162 game season, but you know, so far we're seeing some trends that, you know, there's some good pitching on this Cubs roster, and Jameson Taillon has not been one of the good ones.
No, but I'm also not too concerned about it. We've seen these teams sign free agent pitchers, particularly the Cubs. And a lot of these pitchers kind of get off to a slower start. They're adjusting to a new, you know, style and area and team. And, you know, John Lester got off to a poor start. John Lackey got off to a poor start. Yu Darvish got off to a very poor start. Even Marcus Stroman last year got off to a really poor start. And those things kind of came together. And if you watch Sunday's game, today's game, he wasn't great, but he did record a decent number of strikeouts and a little bit of bad luck. The defense kind of let him down today.
That's the thing, is this team needs to field really well to achieve their maximal position in, you know, wherever they're going to do. They have to play good defense. They have to spray the ball because they lack a lot of power. And their for most of their rotation, they're not bat missers. So if you're going to succeed, it starts and ends with playing great defense. And today was a letdown.
Yeah, I mean, the up the middle defense, you trust well. Dansby is just so smooth and efficient at what he does. Nico Horner is also very good at fielding, but when you have little Nick Madrigal over at third who needs to put his full body force into just throwing across a diamond, or can't get the line drive over his head because he's not that tall, or you have a bunch of hodgepodges in right field trying to play right field, that makes things a little more difficult. We talked about on last week's show, we like the defense up the middle. We like the defense in center field. We love the defense that Ian Happ provides. Our catchers should be providing us good defense, but the corners on the infield and right field right now are kind of defensive black holes. And you hope that when Seiya Suzuki comes back, he plays like he did defensively in Japan, because what we saw last year from Suzuki was great arm, not so good route running, but we did see him play some good defense in Japan. So you hope that when he comes back, even just having a natural right fielder will help things. Because Trey Mancini isn't going to make Gold Glove plays in right field. Neither is Miles Mastroboni.
Definitely no.
And neither is Patrick Wisdom, for that matter. Patrick Wisdom, you want him defensively more at third base, not right field.
Yeah. And, you know, right now, like you said, until we get Seiya Suzuki back, everything has shifted a little bit, and I don't understand quite some of the shifts. I don't know why Nick Madrigal is getting so many innings. But Patrick Wisdom is swinging the bat better than Nick Madrigal, and Patrick Wisdom is a better defensive third baseman, and Patrick Wisdom has the power to hit it out of the park.
He's already hit three.
On a team that has not hit that many home runs.
No, they haven't. Because, look, you scored 10 runs on Saturday. You hit two home runs, but just two solo home runs. We've seen in the past where the Cubs could score 10-plus runs, and they're hitting four or five of those, but really, the run production from the Cubs on Saturday mostly came from just putting the ball in play, and that's going to be more their MO.
Right. Yeah, but I believe I saw the Cubs were like in the bottom five of team home runs.
Does that surprise you?
No, I mean, but it's still frustrating to see.
And I will say this. Up until yesterday, the home games we were playing at Wrigley, a lot of them were wind howling in colder days.
So only three teams have less home runs than the Cubs.
I'm going to guess one of them is the Oakland A's.
Nope.
What about the Nationals?
Yes.
Okay.
The three teams that have less home runs than the Cubs are all tied at five. Nationals are one of them.
Okay. It's not the Cardinals, is it?
Nope.
No. Not San Francisco. No.
I'll give you a hint. The other two teams play in the same division.
As the Cubs?
No, as each other.
Oh. Is it the Marlins?
Nope. It is the Tigers and the Guardians.
Oh, the Tigers. Yeah, Tigers. Ugh.
Ew.
Yes.
Yeah, let's see. Home run leaders. Pete Alonso has almost as many home runs as the Cubs.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Pete Alonso has just been crushing them.
Yeah, he has.
But
as he tends to do.
Yeah, I mean, but the Cubs yesterday, I mean Saturday, who knows when you're listening to this, Saturday, they put together a really nice game. Steele, like I said, didn't have his best stuff, but really powered through. And you had good defensive plays, and the bats just came alive. And like you said, there was two home runs, but they were solo shots. It was all getting guys on, moving guys over, and making contact. And it was a really nice team win. And then today was kind of a disaster.
Yeah, defense wasn't good. They couldn't come up with some of the big hits. You had the Rios home run, but that was about it.
So this team as a whole, I'm not, you know, like we said going into this, this is a team that still is flawed, but it's much better than they were last year. And you hope
Suzuki's another shot in the arm too.
You hope. That's the hope. You know, at least gives you a better defense. And I think, you know, Tyone's going to be better. He's going to have to be better. And being more consistent on defense, and some of that is going to be guys getting healthy. And, you know, I think you have the talent to be able to string a decent number of wins together, but I guess my big concern is, do they have enough skid stoppers? You know, when you looked at the most successful Cubs teams, they had several guys who, if you had a couple game losing streak, could come in and just pitch a lights out game,
mm-hmm.
and really stop that skid. And, you know, right now, they may have a bunch of guys that could, I guess, but they don't have a guy that you're confident could come in. Maybe Stroman, but, you know, I'm still sticking with my prediction of this is a 500-ish team, mm-hmm. and that's what they're playing like. The record shows that. That's what they're playing like. And, you know, I'm hoping that it came down to, listen, that the Brewers are a lot better than we expected. And, you know, a lot of people were high on the Rangers. So maybe it's just, we played some good teams, and when we get to play against the Scrubs, we start stacking some wins. That's a possibility, but so far I have not seen anything that's made me confident that this is going to be a team that can really compete for the division.
Well, and one of the problems too, is one of the things you think about is just the remaining month. It's a tough month. You're playing the Mariners. You have all those games against the Dodgers. You don't want to dig yourself too big of a hole early on. If you can just keep afloat, then you can go forward and feel better. Like if they came out of this month right around 500, whether it's a few games over or under, if you're right around the 500 mark after all those tough games, then I think you can go forward. If you're 5+ games under 500, then you're in a little bit of a trouble. Even if it's only April, you can't win a division in April, but you can lose it. So I don't think this team's going to win the division. I don't even think they're going to make the playoffs, but I just want them to sustain being in the mix for it.
I mean, does that make sense? The good thing is they do have a bunch of games against the Dodgers, and they're playing the Mariners. The Mariners aren't playing very well either. And the Dodgers aren't playing that great. Both of those teams by the end of the season, I'm expecting to be very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they're, I mean, They're both spinning the wheels a little bit. The Phillies, who are a very good team, are really struggling. The Cardinals, we anticipated to be competing for this division, are struggling.
Oh, just wait on the Cardinals, though. When they play us.
Yeah. No, I'm saying is teams that we expect to be good by the end of the season are struggling right now. So it's, you know, the Cubs aren't, you know, the sucky part is that one of the teams that's playing best in baseball happens to be in their division.
Freaking Brewers, man. Just how?
Right?
How is it every year they call up somebody no one's ever heard of and they play like a star? Yeah, all these rookies are mashing home runs left and right. The only thing that I'm getting hope of is that after they mash after a while, they cool off a bit.
Anybody but the Cubs beat the Brewers yet this season?
The Cardinals beat them once yesterday. That was it. But they destroyed the freaking Mets. They didn't just beat them. They kicked their ass. They lit up Scherzer. These new prospects that they brought up, I didn't know these guys. And now they're playing like superstars. It's so irritating. Because why can't we do that? Why can't we pull shit out of our ass and make it great like the Brewers seem to do every year?
Right?
So frustrating.
The Rays, man, are killing it.
They are. I don't want to take anything away. I'm trying not to, but they've played what? The Tigers and the A's?
Fair.
But still, to win that many games in a row, that's in baseball, not easy to do. It is not easy.
I'm trying to remember. I want to say when I was younger that the Reds had started like 17-0 or 18-0 to start a season. So we're not anywhere in that ballpark yet. But you know, kudos to the Rays.
Yeah.
Even if you're playing bad teams, winning is winning.
Yeah, and you know, every bad team will beat a good team every season in baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, the Pirates have been playing pretty well. Though they took a big blow today with O'Neill Cruz getting hurt, but still, yeah, they've been playing pretty well.
That's a tough blow. Do we know the extent of the injury yet?
It was a fractured ankle. I don't know what the timeline is for that. I haven't seen anything.
Better an ankle than a knee. But that was a tough blow.
Right.
You know, he's a good baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still remember that one game he had against the Cubs last season when he was just clobbering the ball. But, you know, they're a good team, or he's a good player, and the Pirates are playing fairly well.
Didn't they sweep Boston?
I don't know what to think about Boston.
Yeah, I don't think Boston's that. They can score some runs. I just don't think they're gonna pitch very well.
But the team on the other side of town, the White Sox, not playing so great. You know, they started off not with that nice series against the Astros. They didn't win it, but played well against the Astros and have sort of struggled since. You know, today at least you got a good sign. Kopech pitched pretty well.
Much better this time around than giving up, what, 5 home runs?
Yeah. You know, he gives up 1 run, and none of them were home runs. And the bullpen came in and pitched, you know, 2 scoreless innings. But, you know, the White Sox bats just were cold, so cold.
Which wasn't what the case until yesterday, because bats have been red hot.
The bats, for the most part, yeah. You know, Tim Anderson's doing his Tim Anderson thing. Vaughn swinging the bat well. Moncada's, I think he's still batting over 300.
Mm-hmm.
Colas is still batting over 300. Grandal is giving you his slash line is, if you could get this slash line at the end of the season, you've got to be really happy. 269, 387, 462. So
Luis Robert, man, when he's healthy, he is definitely a top five hitter in baseball. Just, he makes it look so easy. He's been killing it.
Oh, absolutely. Luis Robert. I mean, got an 1100 OPS. He's swinging the bat really well.
He is an MVP. If he's healthy, he is an MVP candidate. He's that good. Got to stay healthy, though.
I mean, that's the key.
Because we already have injury issues again with Eloy Jimenez.
It's really frustrating to see. It's none of those. You just keep getting compounding nagging injuries with him.
It's like a cycle. I mean, people have conditioned themselves to be like, all right, when's he getting hurt next? And it's frustrating for a guy that has such talent as a hitter. If that guy is healthy, I think he's a 40 home run hitter and an all-star. But every time he seems to get hot, these injuries happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's only on like the 10-day disabled. But, you know, like, you just can't keep seeing the injuries over and over, especially soft tissue type things. It's one thing if you get a knee, can't always help that. Break a bone, can't always help that. The soft tissue, the pulled muscles, is he putting in the work to stretch and keep his body in great shape? This isn't a serious injury, but it's just, you live in constant fear as a White Sox fan saying, all right, when are we going to lose Eloy again?
Yeah.
But yeah, today you had O'Neill Cruz break the ankle against the White Sox. And I didn't watch the game live, but I watched the replay and I feel awful. I know the bench is cleared. I don't think that was a dirty play.
No, not at all. That was a really bad slide by Cruz. If you called it that, he went right into him. He wasn't trying to get around him. He wasn't trying to slide under him. Basically crashed into him.
Yeah. It was just an unfortunate play. You know, I don't think anybody was doing anything. It was just, a rough baseball play and a young player that didn't protect himself.
Yeah.
Best
way you could put it.
So, I don't know. This team is just White Sox team, though, is a little frustrating. And even yesterday, you had your bats come alive and you scored 11 runs without a home run.
Mm-hmm.
But Clevinger didn't pitch well.
No, and this was coming after Lucas Giolito had an absolute stinker and Lance Lynn had an absolute stinker against the Giants.
Yep, absolutely. And you've got Reynaldo Lopez, who has kind of been your de facto closer, and he hasn't looked that well, doing that well. I mean, he hasn't gotten blown up, but he's giving up he's traffic. Giving up runs in the closer role, and you just can't really have that because, you know, a lot of these games they're not save opportunities, but you know you've gotta shut those down.
Yeah, and it's something where you don't have a lot of wiggle room because your bullpen is kind of thin right now with guys you trust. There's been some shakeups already. Jose Ruiz is gone because he was struggling mightily. Diekman has struggled mightily. He's still here, but you know, you've had to make some shuffle moves. You try to implement Jimmy Lambert in some situations, and you know, it's hard for Pedro Grifol when a lot of your pitchers haven't been pitching well. You hope that despite the loss, that today's Pirates game is at least an indicator that the pitching is going to come around a little bit, because look, if this pitching comes around and the team keeps scoring the way they did outside of today, then they're going to be a dangerous team. They're going to be a team that can win a lot of games, but you got to have both things functioning at the same time.
That's the thing is, you know, am I long-term worried about this pitching? No, but the White Sox, this is the White Sox in a nutshell, is if everybody plays like they're supposed to play, this is a championship caliber team, but they don't have room for guys, injuries. They don't have room for guys faltering. The depth isn't there for this team.
Right.
And, you know, we said Dylan Cease, the expectation is greatness from Dylan Cease, and he's going to the mound tomorrow, which probably if you're listening to this, Dylan Cease is pitching this game. And I'm sure he's going to give us a good outing, but we need consistently and solid starts from Lynn, and Giolito's got to bounce back to form. I mean, the start before that, he was very good. And this one, last one was a stinker. You know, we have to minimize the stinkers. Even if don't pitch great, you have to keep your team in those games. And you know, we need Clevinger to pitch better. And, you know, the consistency has to be there for this team. And as far as the bullpen, I'm not worried at this point. You know, we're still in April. They're still figuring that out. As a new manager with a new bullpen, it's going to take some time to figure out, all right, what's going to be our go-to, you know, guys in these different situations. And come mid-May, if they haven't figured that out, that's going to be a tough sled. But, you know, for these next couple weeks, you're going to be figuring out, who do I trust? Who's my high leverage guy? Who do I go to against a tough lefty? You know, you're figuring this out, who your guys are, who you trust in different situations. Some of it's going to be the advanced metrics, and some of it's going to be just your gut feel as a manager, whose confidence it gives you confidence. And we're not there yet, but that starting rotation just needs to put on their big boy pants and go out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you feel, like you said, you feel confident every time when Dylan Cease takes the ball, and you want to feel that again when you are able to give the ball to Lance Lynn. And Lance Lynn had a bad start, and I think you're going to see more good than bad from Lance Lynn. So really my question is, Lucas Giolito, he struggled last year, struggled mightily in Pittsburgh. Are we ever going to see any semblance of the Lucas Giolito we saw years ago in 2020, 2021, 2019? Because they need that. They need some semblance of that.
I think that guy is gone, but I think you can at least get towards that guy. I think there's a solid pitcher still there. just the consistency. We've seen games where he can pitch well. It's just the consistency. You can't have a stinker, a good game, a stinker, a good game. That's not helping this team. What you need to do is good game, and no stinkers or minimal stinkers in games where you're off. You at least power through and only give up four, maybe five runs to keep your team in the game. You can't give up 7-run games. You can't give up 8-run games.
Right.
Your team's out of it at that point. Even for a good hitting team, you need to keep up. You know, Tyone has gone two games where neither were good games, but at least he kept the Cubs in ball games. That's what you need to have when you're off, when you're not pitching well, is keep your team in a ball game.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
And the good thing is they're not far out of, you know, the lead in this division. You've got two absolute dumpster diver teams in the Tigers and the Royals. And the Twins and the Guardians are, you know, a little bit better than you right now, but you're playing the Twins. So if you win that series, you know, you're right back in the hunt of things. So, you know, like you said, I think that is a good quote. You can't win the division in April, but you can lose it. And the White Sox have the opportunity here to really close that gap and keep things, you know, buoying until they can get some more consistency from some of their starting pitching.
Yeah, absolutely. The division's not good, and their pitching is not going to sustain being this bad. I think it is going to improve, and I think we are seeing some legit bounce back performances from some of the hitters like Robert and Moncada and Yaz. So if they keep that stuff up, then things are going to turn for the better. They need to stay healthy and they need to execute. They need to do it.
Right. Let's wrap this up. Talk a little Bears. There's not a ton going on. We are what, like 3 weeks away from the draft?
Yeah, it is coming quick.
It's coming quick. So now it's starting to get to the nitty gritty. This is the time where the Bears are going to sit down and really come up with their final draft board and start doing mock simulations to anticipate. Because, you know, what's wild is the Bears have a top 10 pick. And in most years, you have a good idea of what the board's going to look like when you get there. And I guess we have a fair understanding of what the board is going to look like when the Bears draft. But, you know, there's a couple of wild card teams, and the way this is playing out, that, you know, this could swing wildly for the Bears depending on how some of these teams decide to draft. You know, the Lions are a wild card. The Seahawks are a wild card. The Raiders are a wild card. And it could really change the dynamic of how the board looks when the Bears go to draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to really determine on where they go, I think, whether they stay where they are or they trade back again.
I think they would love to trade back, and I'm all aboard there because I think for them, you could pick up some draft capital and still get a similar range player because, you know, you're not going to make the move. They made that move with the number one pick before free agency, and that was their plan. They wanted to go into free agency really having a more clear picture of what their draft compensation was going to look like, what players they had, and bringing in DJ Moore as part of that package helped shape how they, you know, worked their off season. But if the Bears move back from 9 at this point, it won't happen until they're on the clock. on the draft day.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to happen beforehand. No.
And I think that at that point is, you know, unless if you know, Will Anderson is on the board when the Bears go to draft, they're obviously not going to, they're not going to trade. They're making that pick. I think if Jalen Carter is on the board, they probably don't trade back. If Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher from Texas Tech, is on the board, I don't think they trade back. But otherwise, if those three guys are off the board, which there's a really good likelihood will be, I think they're going to explore the opportunity to trade back. And again, it takes two to tango. You can't just be like, you just trade back. You have to find somebody that's willing to trade back with you and give you the compensation to make it worthwhile. Like, you're not just going to trade back and be like, oh, hey, trade back from 9 to 15. We'll give you a 7th round pick. Like, what benefit does that have for you? That doesn't make sense.
Not much, no.
You have to find a team that's willing to give you value. And that means a guy that they're in love with is fell. So does that mean maybe a Will Levis if he falls? I don't know. But, you know, I started to look closer and closer at the draft and start to look at guys. And, you know, I started ranking where this draft was deep and where this draft was strong. And I kind of did my personal rankings of things. And the linebackers and the safeties in this draft are abysmal. Like, if you need a safety or a linebacker, good luck. You're not, there's very little in this draft.
That's why they were active at linebacker and free agency.
Yeah, that's, you know, I really didn't piece that all together, but they, you know, you need good linebacker play for the style of defense, and you weren't going to get it in the draft. So you went out and you spent free agent dollars. It makes sense based on this. You've got your safeties already in place. And I would have loved to seen them draft another safety, but I don't think so. I think you just stay away with this because there's not a lot going on. Defensive tackle. This is not a great draft. You've got a couple of guys in the first round, Jalen Carter, Kalijah Kancey, Brian Brisset, and some later guys, not late, but you've got Moro Ojomo from Texas and Jalen Redmond from Oklahoma and Adebowale from Northwestern, who I think are going to be solid, but it is not so deep in defensive tackle. So it kind of makes sense to what the Bears did in free agency. They just signed another defensive lineman, Rasheem Green, because there's a possibility that they're not going to be able to bolster this roster in free agent or in the draft through defensive tackle. So Justin Jones and the other couple other guys that they've brought in, I think are, you know, it's a possibility that that's who your defensive line is in the interior.
Yeah.
Wide receiver. I put wide receiver next. I don't love this class. It honestly, other than Jackson Smith and the Jigba, nobody in this draft class is in the top 8. Like, if you take last year's draft class of wide receivers and this year's draft class of wide receivers, only one guy from this year is in the top 8 of those players. And that's Jackson Smith and Njigba. There's this class is just absolutely nothing compared to last year. And honestly, other than the top five, maybe six guys, is any wide receiver that you're drafting for a trait. You're drafting a guy that's tall but might have some drops. You're drafting a guy because he's played some special teams. You're drafting a guy that's fast. You're drafting a guy that's runs good routes. You're drafting a guy that's athletic. You're not drafting a guy that's got multiple of those things or those things and put up good production. So I'm not saying that one of these guys can't be take that leap and be a good NFL player. It's just there's nobody that's like, there's a couple of guys that are good, but beyond that, it is crapshoot. I mean, a total crapshoot of who's going to make it and how are you going to develop them. And there's a lot of wide receivers in this draft class that are tiny, 5'6", 5'7", 5'8", 165, 170 pounds. It's a little bit of thin pickings.
Well, and again, that's kind of the importance here, why we got DJ Moore from Carolina, because that filled a hole that was going to be harder to fill with what was in this draft.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as I'm going through this, everything that Ryan Poles has done has sort of made sense. You know, he's filled where he's not expecting to be able to fill in free agency. He's filled or in the draft, he's filled with free agency. My next ranking is quarterback. There's a handful of guys that are going to go high. And then after that, there's a lot of guys with question marks. And so you, even at the Bears, you brought in a free agent wide receiver or a quarterback to back up Justin Fields. My next ranking is interior offensive lineman. This is actually not bad. There's not a ton of guards I love, but there's quite a few centers, which is nice because that is a position of need for the Bears. And I would be shocked if they don't take a flyer on one of them at some point. There's some higher end ones like the center from Wisconsin, Tippmann, or the center for Minnesota. But there's some deeper cuts like Penn State, Michigan's Ohio State center. The Big Ten is giving you a shit ton of centers in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
Next, I ranked offensive tackle. I think this is actually a pretty solid class of offensive tackles, which is good. And I think, again, the Bears didn't make them a move in free agency with tackle. This is a pretty deep class of tackles. You know, at the top, you've got the guys that we've heard of, the Skaronskis, the Paris Johnsons, the Broderick Jones, you know, those guys. But also you've got Darnell Wright, who I think might end up being the best of all of those at tackle. You've got Cody Mock, who from North Dakota, who can play probably all five positions on the line. Jalen Duncan from Maryland, Matthew Bergeron from Syracuse. He's a guy to keep an eye on. Warren McClendon from Georgia, the other tackle on that offensive line. Those are all guys that are quality players that, can come in and start day one.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm next was tight end. I think it's actually, there's like one top end guy, but there's a lot of depth in this, especially in the later rounds at tight end. Edge rusher. This is a pretty deep class of edge rusher. Surprisingly, you've got, but it's all guys that are going to go rounds 1 through 4. After that, it just really bottoms off. But, you know, there's Derek Hall. There's the guys we've we've talked about, like Will Anderson and some of those first round guys. But later on, there's like Derek Hall. There's the Azoma kid from Kansas State, Andre Carter from Army. There's some interesting names there. Edge rusher. Running back is my next class. There's a poop ton of guys. Like Bijan Robinson is the elite guy in this draft who may actually make a first round grade. But you've got a, you know, if you're looking for speed, you've got Keaton Mitchell from East Carolina, Devin DeShane from Texas A&M, Tank Bigsby from Auburn, Tajay Spears from Tulane. Or if you're looking at like power backs, there's Johnson from Texas. There's Chris Rodriguez from Kentucky, Tavion Thomas from Utah. And the deepest class, I think, is cornerback. So again, like if you're the Bears, you need edge rusher, you need running back, you need cornerback, you need an offensive tackle. And those are the two positions that were that's the deepest. So you're starting to key in. You know, look for the Bears to start hitting those positions. And in what order? I don't know. I think it's gonna play out a little bit of what the board looks like when they get to the draft. But you know, if your first three picks in this draft are edge, cornerback, and tackle, I would not be shocked at all.
I wouldn't either. I mean, you know, you look at the cornerback situation and you need more depth there, because I like Jalon Johnson. You like Jalon Johnson, right? But
yeah,
has he ever been fully healthy?
No, he has not.
That's the thing. The skill is there. We've seen him play well, but can we trust him playing 14 plus games? I'm not so sure.
And we saw, like, he was out last year and we saw some good play. Mm-hmm. We saw Kyler Gordon grow and grow and grow until the end of the season. You were like, okay, I like what he's doing. I mean, that beginning of the season was real rough. That transition was tough for him. But yes, by the end of the season, you saw some nice things. And I think you're going to see even better things.
I think he's going to be very good, because the rookie struggles. Cornerback is arguably one of the hardest positions to adjust to when you get into the NFL. There was going to be growing pains.
Yeah, and we saw those with him. Frisker didn't have he had some struggles here and there, but overall he played great. But cornerback is a different animal. And
right,
we saw, I mean, a guy like Sauce Gardner came in and just played great game one. But I think we expected that, because he was drafted so high, and the size and speed of him just great. But Kyler Gordon was a guy that fell to the second round, and he struggled early on. I think people got really frustrated because, you know, they didn't draft the guy I wanted them to draft, and now you've got this guy that stinks. But he really did play well. And you saw some of the undrafted rookies and other guys that stepped up and played fairly well in that defensive backfield. So I'm not, you know, being like, oh man, the Bears absolutely need to get corner, but there's just a lot of talent here. And the way the NFL has evolved, cornerback is a premium position, because you know, running these spread offenses and these high powered passing games, you need more cornerbacks. So, you know, it's partly as depth, so you're not relying on undrafted players. It's partly, you know, is insurance for, is Jalon Johnson going to be healthy? It's also insurance. What if you can't work out a contract extension with Jalon Johnson? All of those things go into play. But I mean, there were some guys I liked. I did like a handful of the guys that played last year. And so I'm not saying you absolutely have to go out and bring in a guy, but this this class has got so many good cornerbacks, I think it's silly to not at least dabble in that market and try to bring somebody in with some real talent to help your ball club.
Yeah.
And the Bears did make one free agent move, which was a little surprising. This is usually the dead period where you don't see guys sign. They brought in a defensive lineman, Rasheem Green. And he's a guy that, is going to help bolster this line. And you know, because there's a possibility that we go into this season where, you know, this is the line, the defensive line we have. And I think trying to rank it against the line from last year, and the line from last year was bad. On paper, you were like, okay, the paper at the beginning of the year, you're like, okay, this is not great, but I think we can make do. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the season, we saw how bad it was. Difficulty stopping the run, no pressure on the quarterback. I think you're more solidified this year with some of the guys you brought in, but I think you need to infuse more talent. I still think you're going to be giving up running plays. I think you're going to be able to run on this team. Unless you end up drafting like Jalen Carter, but you need to improve those quarterback pressures. If you don't, you know, this team is not going to be as successful as we hoped.
Right.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, ShyFanPad2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I want to...